Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, August 3rd. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga Hospital, offering the greater Saratoga community telehealth and safe in-office visits at Saratoga Hospital. Urgent care, primary care, and its specialty providers, saratogahospital.org. Joining us on the line today is Dr. Jeremy Stopker, a family practice physician at Community Health Programs in the Berkshires. He is here to answer your LGBTQ healthcare questions. Medical Monday is always a very popular program, so be sure to get your calls in early, 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Jeremy Stopker and your calls, all coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. Dr. Jeremy Stopker, a family practice physician at Community Health Programs in the Berkshires, joins us on the line today to discuss LGBTQ healthcare. Dr. Stopker graduated from Georgetown University School of Medicine in Washington, D.C. Most recently, Stopker was a teaching and attending physician at the Center for Family and Community Medicine at Columbia University Medical Center. He also worked as a private practitioner at Westside Family Medicine in New York City. Dr. Stopker has a special interest in providing a safe zone for LGBTQ health, as well as alternative and complementary medicine approaches. To be part of today's conversation, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, it's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Jeremy Stopker, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thanks so much, Jackie. I'm really excited to be back.
It's great to have you. First, let me ask you, how are you doing? How is your family? I hope everyone's in good health.
It's very sweet of you. I and my young kids are all healthy and going a little stir crazy, but having fun and are happy that we now live in Berkshire County instead of in the heart of New York City.
And how are the kids occupying themselves while they're at home?
They're jumping in lakes and running through woods and doing a little bit of cooking and cleaning, but mostly making each other crazy and us a little bit crazy. But we're having a lot of fun. There are a lot of silver linings to coronavirus if you look for them, and spending more quality family time has been one of them for us, despite all the misery it has wreaked in this world.
Well, Dr. Stopker, I'm so happy to hear that everyone's in good health. And the first thing I want to ask you is, for those who don't know, when we say LGBTQ health, what does that entail?
So the simplest answer that I often give is just that good LGBTQ health is just good healthcare. It's not anything that's incredibly complicated. It's hopefully open-minded, accepting, and inclusive care, which we really should be providing to anyone, regardless of your gender, your orientation, or whatever other background you bring into the medical office, or now, I guess, to the video chat, which is how we do most of it. And approaching that from an open-minded, non-judgmental standpoint, regardless of the patient, I think is really important. But I think it's particularly important with the LGBTQ community.
I like what you say when you say non-judgmental. A Harvard School of Public Health poll showed that 1 in 5 LGBT adults have avoided healthcare because they're afraid of discrimination, and that's even higher for transgendered patients. Is this getting any better?
I hope so. That's a better question for a patient or a survey than it is for the guy on the other side of the desk holding the stethoscope, I think. I think that statistic actually just only reflects one of the many barriers that this community has to good healthcare. Mm. We could talk about this for a full hour easily, but some of the major points are just that we are in a country that primarily has employer-based health insurance, And the LGBTQ community experiences a lot more workplace discrimination and statistically is more likely to be unemployed and certainly uninsured or underinsured. So our insurance system sort of works against them. You bring up a really good point, which is that a lot of people are really uncomfortable. And I think, you know, do feel judged, looked down upon, or one of my new favorite words is, quote, othered, and excluded. And so that, I think, is a big barrier also. And then, you know, insurance aside, there's even just finances. This is, you know, a community with a lot more financial challenges. They oftentimes aren't as closely tied in with their family or the support networks that other people have access to. And so even if you have insurance, or if you're lucky to live in a state like Massachusetts that really does have an excellent Medicare option, sometimes, you know, making the copays is hard. Or if you don't have a car to get to the appointments, which is now less of a barrier, thank goodness, which has actually been great for some of our patients. But, you know, the financial aspect, the logistical aspect, the emotional aspect, there are so many reasons that we know, and I'm sure some that we don't know, that have come up as barriers to this community getting high quality, regular health care.
Now, I've read in your bio that it's very important to you that you've created a safe zone for these patients to come see you. What are some efforts that you've made to make that happen? What do you do specifically?
So it's something that we talk about in the office. CHP at a number of offices for this calendar year of 2020 is undergoing a systematic review and education program put on by Fenway Health, which is this incredible organization based in Boston that does nationwide advocacy and education for LGBTQ providers. And so, you know, a lot of people are involved. Some of my front desk staff are involved. My practice manager is involved. We interface with the IT team on how we can make our electronic medical record more amenable to making sure we are addressing people by their preferred pronouns. We're making sure we're using their preferred first name and their preferred gender. And, you know, those are systems issues. Those are personnel issues. And so it's something that we talk about. We have hired a few people from the community since I came into this office. We actually, you know, have another provider starting next month who is very interested in LGBTQ health as well. So I think it has to pervade, you know, HR and IT and the phones and every aspect of what we're doing. We also, you know, have little rainbow stickers and decorations that my daughter has made all over all the offices, framed, taped, wherever you can find them.
And I mean, we can't ignore the fact that we are in the middle of a pandemic. I'm sure that's changed so many things about the way that you provide your health care. But one thing I know just from being in college is that community is such an important part of LGBTQ life. What have you heard from your patients as far as maybe feeling isolated right now?
So I think all those things that we talked about make it hard to connect with a healthcare provider can sometimes make it hard to connect with other people, and that's particularly acute right now. The LGBTQ community has, you know, historically sort of had to take care of itself because a lot of people don't have the family support that would normally provide that function. And when it's harder to get together with people, when people are losing their jobs, when people are losing their cars, that is an additional challenge. And I think, you know, more than anything else, I'm seeing what I'm seeing in a lot of my patients from all walks of life is that folks are lonely, they're isolated, and they're scared. And you don't have to be, you know, transgendered to experience that. But maybe if you are, it's even more acute. And we're definitely seeing that across the board, and particularly in our LGBTQ population.
Dr. Jeremy Stopker of CHP is our guest today. He is on the line to discuss LGBTQ health. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call with your questions or just to share your experience. 1-800-348-2551. We have much to talk about, but first we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Jackie Orchard. Dr. Jeremy Stopker of CHP is our guest today. He is on the line to discuss LGBTQ health. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call with your questions or to share your experience. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Stopker, I believe I read in your history that when you were in medical school, there was really no such thing yet as LGBTQ primary care. Is that right?
It's true. I had the great fortune to go to med school in Washington, D.C., which was a lot of fun, and also had an incredibly disproportionately high number of HIV patients in the HIV epidemic. It hit there really hard. And so that specialty care, especially for gay men with HIV, developed relatively quickly, and there were some awesome resources there available and some amazing people to learn from. But I definitely didn't have any role models ever in my career of people who do this from a primary care standpoint. I did have one incredible role model that I grew up with who taught me a lot about advocacy and taking care of people that other people aren't being taken care of, and the importance of being loud and proud and out, and that was my dad.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about how your dad shaped your career choice?
So one of my earliest memories is hearing from my dad that he had an illness that was pretty dangerous, and that he was doing everything he could with some really awesome doctors to not die within the next couple of years. And this is probably when I was around 7 or 8 years old. And, you know, that burns into a kid's memory pretty deeply. And of course it was HIV. You know, he came out in the late 70s, and not long after, who knows when, at some point contracted HIV. When he got it, there were no treatments, and he was told he would have 1 year to live. I don't think he told us that. And by us, I mean my sister and I. But he was in the first trial for an HIV medication, which was AZT, and he did great. And then he got a little bit sick, and another trial came along, and he got into that, and he had all these incredibly amazing doctors who were very welcoming to me coming into doctor visits with him, and I always had a really open relationship with both of my parents. We talked about everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember thinking, man, these guys are keeping my dad alive, and that's really cool. And I also, I think, had some awareness that, although not a lot of awareness, that there were a lot of people judging this disease from a moral standpoint and feeling incredibly uncomfortable about that, and thinking how awesome it was that there were these people who didn't judge and who just cared. And I guess they were my childhood heroes. And so I never thought about being anything other than a doctor from the time when I was really little, and eventually got to be one.
Now, throughout your career as a medical professional, did you have to work with other people who maybe weren't an advocate or weren't as supportive as you? And what is that like?
Not too much. You know, and this is part of the complicated part of doing this, is that I am not gay. And so I haven't experienced, other than through spending a lot of time with my dad and seeing the treatment that he received in various forms, I haven't experienced a lot of that. And, you know, I went to medical school in Washington, D.C., and then I practiced in New York City. And so I've heard lots of incredibly upsetting stories from patients who eventually found me and our welcoming, open care. But I haven't experienced that much on my own of people not being open or accepting of that. I think it's probably a very different situation. And from what I've heard from a lot of patients, it's a very different situation, even in big cities, but more acutely in rural areas. Although the problem in rural areas seems more to just be access to any kind of care, or explicitly some of the specific types of care that the community is more interested in, which we can probably talk about at some point down the road, things like PrEP or fertility treatments if you're, you know, a gay female who is interested in having a baby, or whatever else comes up.
I actually do have PrEP on my list, and I do want to ask you, I mean, first of all, what is it and how does it work?
So PrEP is an incredibly exciting development because it has the potential to eliminate HIV. So PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis, or we refer to it as PrEP, P-R-E-P. There are now a couple different medications. They're both one pill that you take once a day, and they're almost 100% effective at preventing an HIV infection. And so for anyone, gay or straight, who is at increased risk of HIV infection, we have conversations now about whether or not we should be on this one pill once a day. It's easy to take. The company who manufactures it actually almost always pays the copay. Basically, every insurance company covers it. So it's free, essentially, although sometimes that's a little complicated, but most of the time it's free. There's no side effects. It's pretty easy to remember because you just have to take it once a day. And even if you miss a pill here and there, it's still incredibly effective. And if you don't miss any pills, it's absurdly effective. And so if we could just get everyone who is ever at risk of an HIV infection on this, we could completely and totally eliminate HIV. And that is actually the expressed goal of the company who makes the two medications that we're using now.
So is it like, I think the term is suppression therapy? Is it like...
So suppression therapy is also really exciting, and this has to do – so that's a different thing.
Okay.
suppression therapy is when you have HIV already and you take your – we call it HART, highly active antiretroviral treatment, H-A-A-R-T. So PrEP is if you don't have HIV and don't want to get it. HART is if you have HIV and don't want to die of it or give it to anyone else. So these are oftentimes combination pills also, and oftentimes it's just one pill once a day. And the exciting news about that is if you're compliant, you know, if you're taking your medication every day, usually we can get people to a level where what we call their viral load goes down to an undetectable level, which makes it incredibly hard, if not impossible, for them to transmit the HIV virus to other sexual partners. And means that they will die of old age or something else and not HIV. HIV is now a very treatable illness. If you have access to care, which, as we talked about kind of in the beginning of the show, is unfortunately something that the LGBTQ community oftentimes does not have or doesn't feel comfortable seeking.
Dr. Jeremy Stoepker of CHP is our guest today. He's on the line to discuss LGBTQ health and answer your questions. 1-800-348-2551 is the number you can call with your questions. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Stoepker, we do have some calls stacking up, but before we get to some of those calls, so patients with HIV or AIDS, I'm assuming they're under care of specialists, right? They're not still under primary care. Is that right?
So that's not always right. In the East Coast, where we have lots of easy access to specialists, I would guess that the majority of people are seeing an infectious disease doctor, which is the specialty that usually treats HIV medications. Okay. And I haven't read this in a while, but I want to say the last time I looked it up, the majority of HIV care is actually happening by primary care docs. It has gotten a lot easier. It's not something that I have done because I've always had such good access to specialists in the offices where I've worked, mm-hmm. and find that we still do have that here in the Berkshires, certainly over in Albany and in Springfield, on either side of us. And so it's nothing I've ever taken on personally, but I know that a lot of HIV care is done by primary care docs, be it, you know, internal medicine or family medicine docs, or nurse practitioners. But yes, of course, lots of it happens with specialists as well. It has become, fortunately, much less complicated than when my dad was going through it in the 80s and 90s.
What would you say are some of the most commonly discussed topics in your primary care appointments? I mean, what do you feel like are kind of the basics that you give new LGBTQ clients?
That's an interesting question. PrEP is a big topic, and I think other than one place that is just a free clinic in the Berkshires, I think I'm the only provider in Berkshire County registered with PrEP Finder, which is a website that you can go on to find providers that are open and willing to provide prescriptions for PrEP. It doesn't mean that I'm the only person comfortable with it or the only person prescribing it in the county, but it does mean that we are the one office that's trying to make sure as many people can find out about that and access it. So that's a big one, although I have to say with coronavirus, you know, people are dating less and having less sex. And so we've had a number of patients not continuing PrEP just for now. We should say that it's something that's very safe to start and stop. And so a lot of people will take it for a little while, maybe enter a relationship, maybe they're not sexually active for a little while, maybe unfortunately they don't have access to insurance and so they stop, but it's fine to go back on it. And a lot of people have come off it. You know, that's a big one. A lot of it is just the other things that come up. We know that this community is disproportionately affected with mental health issues for a whole host of reasons. And so, you know, anxiety and depression are big topics of conversation. Access to specialists who are open to and accepting and inclusive is definitely an issue. I think, you know, I can't think of a specialty where I haven't had a patient come back to me and say, hey, that was not an affirming visit that I had with this specialist. I felt judged there or I felt othered there, and I'd really like to find somebody else to see. So coordination of care, and specifically coordination of care and making sure I'm making referrals to places where people do feel comfortable, where they do feel included and don't feel judged, is a big part of what I do for whatever medical issue you may have, whether it has you know, a relation to your gender identity or your sexuality. And then, you know, for trans care, of course, there's a fair amount of coordination with, depending on how we are going to affirm your gender using the benefits of Western medical science. You know, sometimes that's hormones and we get an endocrinologist involved. Sometimes that's surgery and we get a plastic surgeon involved. And whatever else we're working on, finding good access to specialists is a really important part of that also.
Dr. Jeremy Stopker of CHP is our guest today. He is on the line to discuss LGBTQ health and answer your questions. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call with your questions or to share your experience. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Stopker, we do have some calls stacking up, and Anna in Woodstock has been waiting for quite some time, so we go to her now. Anna, you're on.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. It was a pleasure to wait and listen to Dr. Stopker. And your questions to him are amazing. I consider Dr. Stopker to be what I call an activist doctor. And there's activists in all professions. And I've had, it's so amazing because I was going to start with like that I have a lot of baggage. But Dr. Stopker explained, you know, it's my past has been, I was diagnosed with linear scleroderma when I was 4. But prior to that, I was diagnosed with systemic, and they told everyone, especially my mom, that I was going to die of it pretty soon.
Oh my.
So she was in a really scary position. There was also abuse in my family. A lot of very severe issues when I was very young. And by the time I was taken to a doctor, I was taken to a surgeon in Children's Hospital in Boston. And I had a lot of horrible, very, very painful reconstructive surgeries on the leg that was affected. In any case, by that time I was getting to be 14 after all of those surgeries. And I would say that I'm sexually fluid. That's how I would describe my sexuality or my gender personality. And I also started to gain weight, and at certain times I lost it. But long story short, by the time I was in my 30s, after having 3 pregnancies, I was having a tremendous amount of problems with my endocrine system. And I lost my health insurance, and I went 10 years without health insurance. By the time I was finally able to get Medicaid through the Obamacare program, I started going to a number of doctors. This was just a couple of years ago. And I had had very bad experiences with doctors prior to that. When you said never, I don't think I've never not felt judged or othered when I went to a doctor. Mm. Never once. Except I have a few friends who are activist doctors. And they never do that to me. But my issue is that I weigh over 200 pounds. I show characteristics of both male and female very, very, very plainly. I have beard, mustache, plus very large breasts. And when I go into any kind of medical professional, basically there's just kind of shock at my appearance. And then I get a situation where I describe my lifestyle, which is active. And I would describe myself as a healthy, sick person because I have a tremendous amount of conditions, but since I didn't have health insurance for so long, I didn't take any drugs because I couldn't afford them. So I did a lot of herbal medication, and that also, like, I immediately get like a very bad reaction when I say that I don't take any medication. And then I just get ignored. I mean, I went to doctors for 3 years with problems like diabetes, problems with my thyroid, problems with my sexual function. I mean, the list goes and basically no diagnosis, just kind of sullen anger, shock, quietness. I mean, I know I'm talkative, but so what do you suggest? Because I feel like I can only go to an activist doctor, and on Medicaid, I have a lot of trouble actually finding and the activist doctors that I do find are booked for 2 years in advance in their Medicaid segment, you know. Like, I've been trying to wait for one of these amazing endocrinologists, and it's 2 years, and now we have COVID, and I'm afraid to go in, you know. And I'm trying to do telemedicine, but how do you suggest I get to doctors who will actually not just view me with shock and kind of derision.
Dr. Stoepker?
Anna, I just want to start off by saying, wow, what an incredibly challenging path you've had, I'm sure as long as you can remember, from being a really little kid. And I think it's worth saying that a lot of
if it weren't for my friends, if it weren't for my friends, I would have died. Yeah.
Right, right, right. I can't fathom how hard all of this has been for you. You know, a lot of the discrimination that the LGBTQ community faces is also faced by people with weight issues. We, as a society, are really hard on people with weight issues, and we put a lot of emphasis on the fact that it's your fault that you weigh what you do, when we know that that's not the case. We know there are a gajillion factors that result in people being
excess
overweight.
Fluid. A lot of it is just fluid. I will go one day where my size of my finger is like a 5, and the next day it'll be like a 9 because I have autoimmune issues that blow up
my whole
body.
And that's not anything. You know, our society has no grasp of that. And that's an additional challenge that you've had to deal with, as well as access to care, right? Like we were talking about in the very beginning of the show, this is a huge problem. So, you know, my first suggestion is to vote and vote for the candidates who are working to improve access to care for people in this country. It's such a huge, huge, it's a human rights issue in our nation that we, one of the wealthiest nations in the world, are absolutely neglecting. And we could spend 100 shows talking about that, but we're going to get sidetracked.
Yeah.
And we should talk, Anna, quickly.
No, but
about
hallelujah.
Trying to find you some help. So I really think it sounds like, you know, the focus, I think you're on the path. Your focus needs to be on finding an endocrinologist that you can work with, because that's probably a huge part of what's underlying this, and finding somebody in your area who is an activist doctor, which is a great term. I love that you use that, is maybe going to be a tricky thing, and you're maybe going to have to tolerate some discrimination. And, you know, that can come from the people with the best hearts. And I'm not saying that I'm immune to it. I'm working as hard as I can to make sure that I'm not, and my staff are not, and our facility is not. But it's a really complicated topic. And so as much as so many people try, that can still happen. But really finding an endocrinologist that you feel a connection to, that you can work with, is important. And in terms of solving the access to care problem and finding people who actually take your insurance, oof, that's a really tricky one. One thing that I know we do a fair amount with the Medicare program here in Massachusetts is if my patient is having trouble finding somebody in the network that can work with them in their specific issues, then we will appeal with the insurance company to go out of network. And we've had, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for me. It's a lot of work for my staff. Oftentimes it's a lot of work for the patients to make that happen. But if you drudge through the paperwork to make it happen, it is oftentimes possible to see people who are not in your insurance network. And so, unfortunately, you know, you might have to be your own advocate for this, or find a friend who's particularly good at navigating paperwork and work with them, but not being afraid to challenge your insurance company to the fact that you haven't been able to get the care that you need, and you may need to go out of the network, and they should pay for that. And advocating for them to do so is another avenue that you could potentially pursue. So, Anna, I wish you all the best with this. It's going to be a long journey. It sounds like you've had an incredibly complicated medical history, but there are people out there who will help you. I'm sure of it.
Anna, if you want to email us at voxpop@wamc.org, I would be happy to give you Dr. Stoepker's email so that you can ask follow-up questions. We do have to take a quick break. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Vox Pop, we'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Dr. Jeremy Stopker of CHP is our guest today. He is on the line to answer your LGBTQ health questions. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call with your questions. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Stopker, we do have some calls piling up. What do you say we get to some of those calls?
I'm for it. And just to interject, I oftentimes go as Jeremy or Dr. Jeremy. My last name is a bit of a mouthful, so you're welcome to address me. And that's, you know, part of being open and inclusive and trying to level the power dynamic that always exists between a patient and their provider. So
I have to say, though, my sister's in medical school, and she's really working hard for that doctor. So I'm trying to say doctor as much as possible because you earned it.
Well, congrats to your sister. She'll, you know, as a female, she'll have a lot more challenges and she'll need some of the validation that that puts with her name.
Yeah, I'm going to start calling her Dr. Alex myself.
Excellent.
I think that'll help. We go now to Julie in Putnam County. Julie, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Jeremy.
Hi, Julie.
I'm a pediatric nurse. and I guess my question is sort of twofold or multifold. I know that a lot of the adolescents and young adults are probably seeing their providers outside of the inpatient setting, which is where I work. But we do get adolescents and young adults in the LGBTQ community. And it seems as if the hospital system is sort of lagging behind the times of acceptance and awareness and seeing these individuals as individuals. And I see a pretty significant lack of education among staff, and just wondering how you see, or if you see, implementation of interventions in the healthcare setting, in the inpatient setting, and education programs for staff, and things that we could be doing to advocate for our patients.
So first off, thanks for the work that you're doing. Taking care of sick kids is never easy, and for raising this issue. So this is a big hot button issue, and I think always has been in LGBTQ health, which is the fact that we have a long history in this country of trying to convince people not to be gay, or thinking that people's sexual orientation can, you know, change and change back by their will. And so these deeply entrenched stereotypes that, you know, gender is a choice, or that your sexuality is a choice, is and has been really hard for us to get rid of. And in big institutions that change incredibly slowly, you're exactly right. We see that happening slower than it happens, unfortunately, other places. That said, I think there are some amazing educational opportunities out there. And we are, I think, you know, raising awareness more as a society than we ever have. And just legally, we've made incredible progress in the last couple of decades. And so hopefully this is all moving in the right direction. But I love your more practical question, which is, you know, what can you do in your institution, or what can other people do in other institutions? Fortunately, there are great organizations out there who provide no or low cost educational programs. They can be in person, they can be online. And, you know, the one I'm becoming the most familiar with is one that we had mentioned just a few minutes ago in the program, which is Fenway Health, which is based in Boston, and one that we as an organization are participating in an educational program with right now, which has been fantastic for our organization. All big hospital institutions are constantly providing educational materials to the people that work there about infection control measures and about their latest policies and procedures. And why not have one of those trainings be about gender? identity or be about sexuality and how to be a more inclusive, open, accepting, and affirming institution. And so if you can do any advocacy with your administration towards promoting those educational programs, towards changing the systems of making sure people are addressed by the proper pronoun that they would choose or the name that they would choose or any of those other things, you know, can go a really long way. I think an important point to make here is that a lot of people in the LGBTQ community don't expect perfection on this. They don't expect to be treated exactly the way they would like to be treated. And I think you could say that for every patient, but particularly a marginalized community like this. If people see that the attempt is being made, that can go a really long ways, right? Like, it's going to be a really long time before any of these organizations are where a place like Fenway could get them or where the community would want them to be. But even making small steps in the right direction can make a huge difference between a patient feeling isolated, vulnerable, and rejected, and feeling cared for. And then allied with the medical field again, as opposed to rejected from it, so that we can get in there and help. And maybe that means getting them a PrEP script so that they never get HIV. Maybe that means, you know, getting them the mental health care that they need to get a prescription to get over the brutal depression that they've been in. These are really critical, literally life-threatening health issues.
Julie, thank you for the call, and also thank you for your service as a healthcare worker. Dr. Jeremy Stoker of CHP is our guest today. He is on the line to answer your LGBTQ health questions. We go now to Martha in Westchester. Martha, you're on.
Good afternoon. My situation is that I have a son who has been on and off hormones the past 3 years. And the reason he's on and off is that he's very tortured with, I want to be a woman, I don't want to. I want to, I don't want to. Mm-hmm. He's seen at least 8 therapists. And of late, what he says is, I want to stop this. I don't want to go through this. I realize that, you know, I just don't want to do it. But at the same time, you know, he seems tortured. So I told him, and he's depressed, of course, because of this situation. I've urged him to see a psychiatrist, and he insists that he doesn't want to take drugs. And then he says, all the therapists are the same. The minute I go to them, they say, go ahead, take your hormones and transition. And it's almost like he's looking for someone to say, let's look at this deep down inside. What do you really want to do this or not? And he seems to be like begging for some kind of help, and I don't know what to do.
Dr. Jeremy, we have about 3 minutes, just so you know.
Whew, so we could spend probably 3 hours. You know, this is an incredibly frustrating situation, and as a parent, I can only imagine how hard it would be to watch your son suffer in this way and be tormented. The first point I want to make is that, you know, this is a less common case. Most people who identify as transgender are very clear about what gender they feel that they fit most with. And while that can change, it is incredibly uncommon for people to be going back and forth. In this case, almost certainly, you know, the mental health aspect that you bring up is involved in that also. And that adds such an incredibly complicated layer on top of it. You know, untreated depression, severe anxiety affect every part of how we see ourselves, be it our gender, our profession, how we relate to other folks. And dealing with that is incredibly difficult. Not finding the support that your son needs is or maybe, you know, he would like us to refer to him as your daughter or she. I'm not sure. I think, you know, finding that out and validating it is incredibly important also. And, you know, if it's changing, then not being afraid to continue to ask that question is incredibly important. We're not going to solve this issue now, that's for sure, but it is incredibly representative of a lot of what people in this community go through is, you know, the combination of not being able to get access to care, having additional conditions that make the medical situation even more complicated, finding people to prescribe the hormones. There's no easy answer to this. But not giving up, trying to be as affirming as you can be as a parent of whatever decision your child is asking you to make or whatever position they're asking you to support, and understanding that, you know, for some people that is fluid and it goes back and forth and they just need love and care. And that's such a huge frustrating part of so many people, especially in the trans community. Their journey is not having the love and support that they need to go through this incredibly difficult thing. Our society does not make this any easier. You know, a lot of people don't have the stomach to take on their trans identity because they're so judged for it. And, you know, the suicide rate in this community is incredibly high because it's still, unfortunately, so unaccepted. And I wonder if that's a factor at play here also. I hope not.
Martha, thank you so much for the call and also for sharing your experience. We are unfortunately just about out of time. We are definitely going to have Dr. Jeremy back on again soon because we have so many more questions for him. But I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those left on the line. I would also like to thank Dr. Jeremy Stopker of Community Health Programs in the Berkshires for joining us on the line today. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. And I am Jackie Orchard. Ray Graff returns tomorrow with Gordon Fricke for an automotive repair episode. Stay tuned now for The Media Project.